Welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. This is your host, Ishai Breslauer. Here we meet every Monday to talk commercial real estate and prop tech. We will dive deep into the different asset classes, discuss the market, talk about the new and exciting technologies, meet key people in the industry, and get some inspiration. Let's begin. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Hope you guys are doing great today. We have today with us Anthony Behar, and we're going to talk about brokerage. We're going to talk about Los Angeles, which is a very exciting topic nowadays with everything that is going on there. And we're going to talk about industrial and a lot of things. Anthony, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and be a guest. This is great.
Beautiful. You know what? Before we even start digging into your story, which I'm sure is interesting and we want to hear, if you could give us like a 2-minute elevator pitch of what your business is about so everybody can understand.
Yeah, so I'm a partner at Major Properties. Major Properties is a boutique brokerage company. So we specialize in commercial real estate brokerage. Our core practice is really industrial real estate. So any manufacturing, distribution centers, warehouses, wholesale buildings, and anything sort of commercial real estate related in the greater Los Angeles area. So we have about 15 agents, 17 agents, and our core focus is in the greater Los Angeles area. So we're really experts in that area. I've been with my company, Major Properties, for 20 years, and wow, the firm has been around for over 50 years now. So I consider myself an expert, and the company is certainly an expert in the Los Angeles real estate.
Definitely. A 50-year firm, and for your experience, 20 years, it's not small. It's definitely not small. That shows a lot. You've seen a lot. You've seen it all, as we call it. You know what? How'd you get into this whole thing? You have to go back. It's like way back.
Yeah. Let me rewind 20 years. Yeah. So that was a while ago. I was in advertising before this, and we had the 01 recession after 9/11. And I was in the technology side of .com, and that whole world kind of blew up in a sense. And I went through some changes and decided to get into real estate. Real estate was in my blood. My father was in real estate. He was an apartment syndicator for 30 years. But I just started networking with people I knew in Los Angeles, and talked to many different firms, big firms, global firms, mid-size, boutique, and I found a comfort level with the boutique firm. So I knew when I went into real estate, I didn't want to be in one of the larger companies. No disrespect to them. I had worked at ABC, CBS, Disney. So I came from that world of really big global companies, and I wanted to switch to a smaller boutique, more focused firm. And I got through to Major Properties, and Brad Luster was the gentleman that had hired me. He's the president of our company, and he had mentored me, and that's how I got my start in brokerage.
So I was from 2001. It's a long way. A lot of things happened since. Tell me something, because you said industrial.
Right.
Was it industrial from the very beginning that you got excited about and you got started to work with, or was it other asset classes and then you turned into industrial?
Well, that's good. Because so before I got into the brokerage, I did a lot of networking. I had some friends already in the brokerage business. I knew investors. I grew up in Los Angeles, so I was born and raised here. I have a big network of people that I knew just from living here, from charities that I'm involved with. And I just started calling everybody I knew that touched real estate. So for anybody that's looking to get into real estate, I would say just start talking to people that are in it already so you get a taste and a flavor. And for me, I knew I wanted to get in onto the brokerage side. I knew it was going to be commercial real estate. So I talked to people that were investing in commercial real estate. I talked to people that were apartment brokers. I talked to people that were office leasing brokers. I talked to people that were on the industrial side. And so I got a really big picture of how that the brokerage world looked from commercial real estate. And then after assessing all these different areas, and I even talked to some resi people, but I knew residential really wasn't for me. And then I kind of had a really good picture, and I knew for me, for my personality, for where I was in my life, industrial kind of was the right area for me. But it's funny, I didn't know anything really about it, but because I came from a world that was, you know, media and Disney was a little sexier, and then you get into industrial real estate, and especially at that time in the early 2000s, it was not a sexy part of real estate, right? Everybody wanted to, you know, own shopping centers, invest in shopping centers, office buildings, of course, the apartments, you know, that's where people were going to. And so I went the opposite way into something that wasn't as saturated, not as sexy at the time. And granted, that world has completely changed now, and we can get into that. But so that's kind of how I fell into the industrial practice, if you will.
You know what? I'm very curious about this, because then it was, like you said, it was very different. It was not as, exciting for people to go into. Today, it's like a big thing. We'll talk about it, obviously, in length. But what I want to say is, you got in and you said yourself, residential, you felt it's not really for you. And I'm assuming you're talking about mostly, not only single family, but you're talking also about multifamily also. And industrial, you sort of felt that you were drawn into, even though you didn't know much about it, even though it was a little bit grayish type of a thing. Right. Why? What was exciting about this and not about that, and not exciting about residential for you, obviously?
Well, I looked at some of the big apartment brokerage companies, and I just didn't like that boilerplate room that I saw in some of those. That turned me off. I didn't really have an investment background, and in apartments, it's really about the investment sales. And I was really just kind of getting into it. And when I spoke to Major Properties, the company I was with, that I'm with still to this day, it was just there was something about it. It was a warmer feeling. It was just kind of down and dirty. That's how I wanted to get. And working with sort of mom, pop businesses, people that were out there, you know, making sweatshirts, t-shirts, jeans, manufacturing furniture, things people use every day. And I just thought, for me, I didn't have to go through a big training program. I didn't have to be someone's runner. I could hit the ground running from day one. And that was another thing that attracted me with the company that I'm at today. So, because I had had a sales background, I had had a business background, I had been in sales and marketing for a number of years. So I knew how to build up relationships. I knew how to talk well to people. I knew how to make presentations. So I didn't need a lot of that type of training when I started. And I really hit the ground running, and I liked that. It was really about me. And I was lucky too at the time that I had a wife. I had recently just gotten married, and it was kind of scary at a time starting, a completely new career right when I had gotten married. But she was working, and she was able to support us, because those first couple of years in real estate, whether you're on the investment side, the brokerage side, is really, really difficult. And there's, it took almost, 10, 12 months before I was able to close my first deal. And I didn't really make much money at all. But you stuck with it. So kind of a long answer.
It's a good answer. I like that. Yeah, and you know what gets me really curious? First of all, kudos to your wife to stick around with that. And it's also a lesson for everybody who's trying to get into this, and don't get discouraged, meaning you gotta stick with it. And also when you're many times in the middle of the road and you are in the middle of trying to get a deal, whether you are on the acquisition end or you're on the brokerage, you know, doesn't matter. Sometimes you got that hump and sometimes you got 3-4 deals on the road. That's the way it is.
That's the way it is.
What I want to ask you is, back in the day when you got into industrial, first of all, you got into mostly on the property side and the acquisition side of brokerage, or on the lease side of it? What was it mostly that you...
It wasn't mostly one or the other, because we do industrial leasing. We do landlord representation, buyer representation. So there's a very natural thing that happens in brokerage. People tend to run with buyers a lot in the beginning because it's a little bit easier. But our firm had a philosophy. We're listing brokers first and foremost. So we tried to build relationships, and it's a lot harder to do this. And that's why a lot of people give up. But building the relationships with the property owners is where I focused a lot of my attention. And it was hard for them to know me, number one. Number two, to build that trust about me and to like me, and then to give me a listing to represent them to sell, which a lot of times is their biggest asset, right? So I focused more on landlord representation, and it was a real, real grind. And it still is a grind, right? But in the beginning, those first few years were really, really a grind. But I'm glad I stuck to this path and this philosophy, because now, and over the years, the last decade and a half or so, I've had great landlord relationships. And for people getting into brokerage, having those landlord relationships goes a long way. And when you have the listings, you end up getting more leverage, you meet other buyers, your name gets out there, and then little by little, you start to get more exposure. And that's how I slowly built up my practice. It was really little by little by little. And then when you do that, you're able to understand how a landlord thinks. And that also then helps me with buyers. It helps me with investors. And it just was it was a slow way, but a nice way to build my brokerage career.
Tell me something. Would you be able to describe the first deal? Meaning, obviously, we're going to dig into the current stuff that you guys do. But I'm saying in the very beginning, the first deal was obviously difficult, took your time. How was that?
It took my time. Yeah. One of my mentors gave me a lead on somebody that was thinking of selling his property. It was a small commercial property. It wasn't even in an industrial property. It was on a big corridor through Los Angeles, small building. And so I met with the gentleman, and he liked me, gave me the listing and trusted me. And it was just it was a two unit, maybe 5,000 square foot little building. And there were 2 month-to-month tenants. It was maybe $750,000. And, but got through it. You know, I ran with it myself. I had help on it, but it was, it's a learning. It's definitely a learning process. You know, I didn't know how to do anything. Even just opening my first escrow, right, was kind of a big deal, and learning how to call a title rep and ask for a title report, and learning all the reports one needs, and keeping your files together. And so all these little things help in the beginning by doing it on your own. So it was a small deal, but it was a fun deal and learned a lot.
You know what? This is so exciting to talk about industrial today versus that time. And if you could describe how lonely, meaning quote unquote lonely, it was then versus today, where everybody is in industrial. When was the cutoff where you started saying, oh my gosh, my world is going to become crazy and it's not as quiet as it was? More competitive, more numbers, more, you know, clients, more everything. More properties.
Yeah. There were kind of two shifts, right? So I would say, like, 06, 07, you started to have some of the big players starting to look at industrial real estate. And that's when it started to get a little bit more competitive. The values were really shooting up. Investors were starting to realize there's good returns on these properties. It's easy sense of management as opposed to an apartment building or certainly a shopping center, having one or two tenants. Typically, the tenants don't bother the landlord. You're not going to hear from them as much on other asset as you would on other asset classes. But then we had the 08 crisis, right? We had 08, 09, 2010. The world turned upside down with the economic downturn. And then I would really say after that, when we started to come out of that in 2011-ish, industrial was starting to pick up and it slowly was picking up. And I would say from there onward till today, more and more players started to get into the industrial world. So you had, it used to be, you know, historically it was mom and pop owned, small time people.
I was about to ask you that. What type of tenants you,
It was different then, right? It was different then. It was, you know, it was like guys just, you know, making t-shirts, jeans, low-end manufacturing, you know, but as soon as we had, and it was a lot of just mom-pa owners, a guy owned it or he had his business there, he owned it. He didn't really know anything about real estate. You know, there's a lot of guys like that. But then, you know, in the mid-2000s, you started to have some of the bigger investors come in. You had the REITs starting to knock on the industrial doors. And that made a huge, huge shift in the industrial market because they realized, hey, I could get pretty good returns. Apartment buildings are getting saturated. The cap rates are really, really low. Shopping centers, everybody's going after. The office building was only for the REITs. And then so people started to look at industrial because industrial was like always down and dirty. It was not sexy, right? It was just four walls, some loading docks, high ceilings, and there was really nothing sexy about it. And usually industrial areas were kind of down and dirty. They weren't in big corridors or big metropolitan areas. So a lot of investors stayed away from that. But in the mid-2000s, when it started to pick up, it started to become more competitive. And then we got into, I'd say in the last decade, the marijuana players started to come in, right? So marijuana users started to go, they went to industrial. If you're going to grow, if you're going to distribute, you have to be in industrial. And before it became legal in Los Angeles, these black market tenants would pay 2-3x what you would get on a regular rent from a typical user. So they started to absorb a lot of space, a lot of industrial space throughout Los Angeles. So then you had a lot of investors say, wow, let me see if I can buy some industrial buildings and I can rent it out to a marijuana user who will pay me 2 or 3x that I would get from a traditional user. So that started to put a lot of pressure on the market, on the industrial market. So you had that. You had the new people looking at it. And then, I don't know, in the last, say, let's call it 5 to 10 years, the e-commerce business started to pick up and then really accelerated, say, in the last 5 years. And now it's exponentially gotten even more intense. So these guys now want more warehouse space. There's more Amazon use. There's more of the last mile. There's more people that just are doing their own Amazon things and they need warehousing space. So whether it's 5,000, 10 or 50,000 space, they need warehouse space. So between the marijuana users, the e-commerce, that has put a lot of, and then the investors looking at industrial, that's put a lot of pressure on the industrial market for availability, and prices have skyrocketed. We have gone up in Los Angeles, the industrial real estate world, price-wise has gone up since 2010, 2011. It's slowly, slowly gone up.
You know what? From hearing you, and you hear the voice of experience because you speak about it and you could hear so many, and I could dissect it to so many details. It's so interesting. And what gets me, what I would like to ask you is, first of all, we understand that there was the mom, you know, the past. You had the moms and pops, the small type of businesses that took, I guess, small, you know, I guess, small square footage within those industrial centers, whatever, or it was smaller. It looked more like an office building that is, like you said, a dirtier, a bad, not such a great side of town, et cetera. And all of a sudden now it becomes bigger, better, nicer, and so on. And we understand that the big players are coming in, and it doesn't have to be Amazon, which is a monster. We're talking about, you know, even smaller, but they need, you know, distribution centers, et cetera, et cetera. But once they come in and you are on the broker side, you sit right in the middle of it and you're structuring deals, you're helping those clients, let's get the deal going. How much did it change the structure of the deal that it comes to buyer and seller, I'm talking about, and the lease? Because you're talking about the moms and pops, fairly, you know, straightforward. Let's get it down. Let's draw a contract. Let's see, here's the term sheet, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden you come to a company. It doesn't, again, have to be, you know, that monster company. Could be any other big company, but those companies have a board and they have shareholders and they have a whole thing going on behind them. And you are standing right in the middle and you have to structure that deal. How different was that?
I would say in the first decade, there was a lot of owner users, and there still is a lot of owner users, right? So we make our widgets. We're going to buy this building. We're going to own it. We're going to operate it. Owner users. That's still a big part of my business. And these guys would get SBA loans that typically would take 90 days to do. And that's still a part of our practice. But today I would say, even the guys that are going to be owner users, they're trying to compete against these investors that are coming in with all cash. So in Los Angeles specifically, there's a lot of money out here today. Debt is very cheap. We're at historical low interest rates. There's just a lot of discretionary money. There's a lot of wealth in Los Angeles. So people will partner up, they'll invest. The economy has been doing great here. Now, the stock market's been doing great. People have been making a lot of money, and so they want to put money into real estate. So today, a lot of these people are coming in with, you know, it's all cash deals, or even if it's not all cash, there's no financing contingencies because they know they'll just get a line of credit. So it's been making it even harder for the owner users to compete against these people. And I represent a lot of owner users, and they're still a big part of our business. But it's been hard for them today, because if you have two offers and one guy says, hey, I need 90 days, and another guy says, I'm all cash, and if you're the owner, you're going to go with the shorter deal. So there's a lot of that. There's more of that today than I would say in the first decade of the 2000s. That's been a really big thing, and it's been harder for the owner users to compete against the investors and more of the money out there today.
That's very interesting. And I want to ask you, related to that, obviously, we have this whole, when I use a correlation or a connection between asset classes, I would say office and residential, or office, even single family homes, they have, they're intertwined in a way that, why am I saying this at all? Because the pandemic showed us how they are connected. People ran out of the offices into the homes. Homes are hot. People want larger homes, et cetera, et cetera. And the same correlation, the same connection, the same relationship you have between retail and industrial. The space in retail, which shrunk somewhat to give more, the distribution centers, more space, more square footage. How is that? How do you see that going? And the retailers coming and saying, I want more space by you, less space by, you know, my retail center or my shop over here or over there, et cetera. Or retail, I would say buyers, are they moving into industrial? What do you see there?
Well, okay, I can tell you this. I don't really do a lot in the retail world. I don't represent retail tenants like restaurants and little boutique stores. But what I could tell you from a macro picture, from what we're seeing, say, for some of the old retail storefront along some of the big corridors. That retail or that real estate is getting changed. So, and what I mean by that is these older obsolete retail stores, small mom and pa, they can't sustain it anymore. They can't really afford the rents anymore. And they don't have the customer base because I think Amazon and e-commerce shopping have just put so much pressure on a lot of mom and pa retailers. So from a real estate investment perspective, those smaller retail, say 5-10,000 foot retail storefronts, those are getting changed. And I'm involved in these deals where we're selling these now to completely reposition. So they're being torn down and they're being turned into mixed use properties along big corridors throughout Los Angeles, which historically for the last 70 years were just really retail. And now we have to look at it a different way. So I spend a lot of my time talking to these owners saying, hey, let's figure out what's the best and highest use today. Maybe it's not just leasing it out to put a new tenant in there. Maybe we ought to look at this and say the land is worth more. Let's look at the zoning. What is your zoning? How high can we build? Is it worth it to sell it to a developer that'll pay you a lot of money because they can build a 5-story building, a 4-story building, and then they can put, parking or one coffee shop on the downstairs. Maybe that's better for you and you could take that money and move it elsewhere to something else that's going to give you a better yield. So those are conversations we're having. That's how a lot of the smaller end retail is changing in Los Angeles. The high end stuff, I think, that like in Beverly Hills and certain parts of Santa Monica and certain parts of Hollywood, that like you're always going to have a really niche high-end retail and there's going to be a market for that. But that some of that lower, that middle stuff, a lot of that real estate is getting changed right now. And it's exciting. It's an exciting part to be participating in that, working with the owners, working with the developers and investors on how we're going to utilize real estate in Los Angeles today. So to answer your question, so from a retail perspective, that's where I see it changing. And from an industrial perspective, since there's, online shopping is not going to go away. The internet has certainly won. It's going to stay here. It's going to be with us for the rest of our lives. And there's a certain level of comfort and ease by shopping online. We all do it. And that means industrial space is going to be in more demand. We have run out of industrial space in LA County. There's a 1% vacancy factor right now.
Wow.
And that is, the stuff that is available, it's mostly obsolete when you see that 1%. So they're building, we need more. The buildings are getting bigger. The ceilings are getting higher. But they're going farther out from the core of Los Angeles out into the Inland Empire, Riverside, all that whole market is really blown up. And that's where a lot of the big, big, big distribution centers are. But you still have, in downtown Los Angeles and a lot of the submarkets around there, we're closer to the urban infill market. So there is a need for a 10 and a 50,000 foot building in these parts of Los Angeles that are more urban infill. So it's a very exciting time. There's so much going on right now.
Very exciting time.
Real estate in LA is completely changing. It's shifting. It's changing. It's growing. In the industrial markets, here blowing up. Retail is shrinking, but there's other uses for that too. And then, the office market too. That whole world is changing as well.
Let me ask you this. And you said just beforehand that you were involved in several of those, I would call it conversions. Everybody's calling them that. What would you say those retail, because again, meaning retail, like you said, the high end will stay high end. Everybody will go to that. Rodeo Drive will be there. And New York City, hottest places will stay there. Once, New York City is still being, I wouldn't say struggling, but it's still out there until we come back, but it's coming back for sure.
Yeah,
But you still have the neighborhood shopping centers are very popular still. People want to go get their Starbucks, etc. But those that are falling in between the lines, they need conversion. The malls, it's a whole different topic. But I would say the big box, you know, there's some out there and they're looking into conversion. What is, and you're involved in that, what type of conversion is most popular? Obviously, it depends on the zoning. We know that. But from your perspective and from your experience, what is the most popular in the LA area to be converted to? Is it office, residential? Is it industrial? What is the most exciting conversion that you see, or the biggest demand?
Well, those are two different questions. So I would say the biggest demand is housing. It's housing. The city of Los Angeles needs to see, they want to see more housing. They want more affordable housing, right? LA is one of the most expensive places to live in the world. You know, it's up there with, I'm sure, Israel, very expensive, New York, Paris, Japan, London, but we're there. It's very expensive to buy a home. You know, a starter home in a good area, $1 million barely gets you anything really nice today. So that kind of gives you an idea. And so it's housing. It's mixed use housing. So it's going vertical. These corridors like Pico, Olympic, the Washington East-West corridors from downtown to Santa Monica, these are the areas, these urban infill areas, where they're going to take the old retail, maybe some old beat up shopping center, the corner ones, and they're going vertical, 4 or 5 story buildings, maybe underground parking, maybe a nice coffee shop on the bottom. That's probably the biggest and highest demand today. So, and then that breaks it down to affordable, so kind of lower income. And then you're going to have some market rate and higher income place too, because people keep coming to Los Angeles. We need housing. Not everybody can afford to buy a single family home in a nice area. And so there's always going to be that demand for people that need, you know, the apartment living. And I think, so that's number one. That is probably the number one conversion. And number two would be industrial. We need more. It's hard. The land, old industrial land, is very expensive today. So it's hard for industrial developers to buy land at a price that makes sense to build. So that's a problem we're running into, but we have a lot of obsolete buildings coming onto the market in downtown. So there's going to be a chance to convert those to better, higher, more modern industrial buildings.
You know what? And that leads me to shift gears a little bit, because you started talking about it, and this is, by all means, it's not a political show and I don't touch politics, but
me neither.
But LA went through a lot. Okay. And I'm talking about real estate perspective. A lot of people left LA and there's certain policies and certain things, whatever, everybody has their reason, but a lot of people did leave LA, just like they left New York, San Francisco, Chicago, you know, the big centers that everybody loves for decades and decades and decades. And, and a lot of people left them and they went to Texas. They went to Nashville. They went to Florida. We know the story. And the question is, you're in LA. And I would like to hear your perspective of what's going on there today. Are you seeing people coming back? Obviously, you know, LA will remain LA. But, you know, with everything that goes on, what was damaged, quote unquote, you know, with the real estate market in terms of, you know, valuations? Or if it wasn't, what's your perspective on it?
Okay, big question.
Yeah, it's a big question.
It's a big question. It's a good question.
The bottom line is, and I would make it very investor type of question. Should a person who comes to invest, should he invest in LA? Obviously, you know, every neighborhood, property, whatever is different. But when they look at the macro, should they run away from LA and go to Nashville? Or is there something in LA that still could be very interesting? And what is it?
So Los Angeles is a very complex city from a demographic standpoint, from a terrain standpoint, from a sub-market standpoint. And it takes, look, I'm an LA native, so I really understand Los Angeles head to toe, front and back. And all these little, even though you say Los Angeles, You know, Santa Monica is its own niche. Mid-City, Miracle Mile is its own niche. The Pico Robertson area, I've done a lot of deals there. You had mentioned that before we started recording. That's a little niche. Downtown is a little niche. You know, Vernon, East LA, Silver Lake. There are all these little pockets, but they're all connected to each other. And they're all, it's like, it looks like one giant city because there's no separation. And then even when you get into the San Fernando Valley, which is over the hill, there's no gap. It's, you know, it's not like, oh, we've got to go 10 miles to the next city. It's all one giant city and it's all connected. And there's all these little sub markets in between, in the middle of all this. So it's a very complex city and you have all types of real estate in there. You have industrial, you have the commercial, you have wholesale buildings. Sometimes you have a wholesale and an industrial and a retail all next to each other. And then across the street, maybe you have a mixed use project. So it's complicated for investors that don't know. The yield today for investors is very low. It's low. It's hard to make money in Los Angeles. So why are people still investing here? People want to park their money in Los Angeles. Los Angeles will always historically give you better appreciation than in most other parts of the country. You know, I don't really know New York real estate, but I know it's very hard, it's very difficult. I don't know it, but most parts of the country, you're not going to see better appreciation than you would here. That's why there's so much wealth and second, third, fourth generation wealth in Los Angeles from families that invested, that owned real estate. Junky old real estate, which nobody would look at today, is worth, you know, tens of millions of dollars. So if you have the sustainability, if you could hold on to property, come to Los Angeles, and if you could ride it out, you're going to make money. You're not going to get great yield, you know, first, second, third year, but over the long term appreciation, you're going to do better than you will if you buy, no disrespect to the Midwest or something like that. But, you know, so it depends on what you're looking for in your real estate. If you want just a nice, you know, six cap and passive income, okay, let's go buy a triple net deal in Ohio or something like that. But which is fine for the type of certain investors. But to get back to your question, that's why people are still coming to Los Angeles. That's why we encourage people to invest in Los Angeles. You have to have a very long-term outlook. And if you have the power to hold on, you're going to do well here. Look, we have the Olympics are going to be here in 2028. And if you own real estate around these venues, the VRBO market's going to explode during that time. Retail, anything that around the Olympics. So I just think it's a good place to invest. We have a lot of the big universities. We have great weather. We have, you know, it's exciting. It's Hollywood, Beverly Hills, the beaches.
Can't compete Santa with the
Monica.
Weather.
You can't. So
can't compete with the weather.
People are always going to be here. People are always going to want to live here and play here and work here. So it's a tough place to do deals, but it's a good place to do deals if you understand it.
Beautiful. Tell me something. For those who are listening, you first of all, from this conversation only, mm-hmm. I'm already convinced. I can tell you that much. I'm saying it with full sincerity that if I would ever consider to do deals, real estate deals in the LA area, I'll definitely call you. That's
Thank
the
you.
One thing. It sounds like very serious. You have so much experience and knowledge. But if you could tell the listeners, and you guys obviously could see the links above, below, and all around us, or wherever medium you are listening or watching. But if you could tell us, Anthony, how can people find you? And, you know, where are you around? Where's your office? How can you help them? And give us a little briefing about that.
Well, that's super easy. Anthony Behar at Major Properties is our company. I'm on pretty much all the social platforms. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. It's been a little quiet for me during the holidays, but normally LinkedIn, I will post a lot of updates about commercial real estate and deals I'm working on blogs sometimes. Twitter a little bit and Instagram a little bit. But in terms of commercial real estate, really for my updates, things that I'm seeing, things that I'm doing, deals that I'm involved in, updates on commercial real estate, I would say LinkedIn is probably a good place to connect with me. And happy to connect with anybody on LinkedIn and share ideas. I have a podcast as well. If I could plug it.
Awesome. What's the name?
So the podcast is called Bihar. It's my last name, Bihar on the Block. And
again, Bihar on the Block?
Bihar on the Block. Awesome. And I, not as regular as you, but I tend to go one a month, trying to get two a month. And mine is about in interviews with big commercial real estate players, mainly in the greater Los Angeles area.
That's amazing. And I'll definitely go and listen to that. So you guys heard Anthony Bihar. And first of all, you should listen to the podcast if you want to learn about the LA area and to learn about the people that he invites. Obviously, it sounds exciting. And if you guys want to learn more, you heard it. Easy to find. LinkedIn is great. Anthony, thank you so much for your time being with us. It was great.
Thank you so much. It was a great time, and happy holidays and
happy
best
holidays.
Of luck on your continued success with your great show here. And I really, really appreciate you having me as a guest. Look forward
thank
to hearing
you.
The recording.
Thank you very much. And you guys, I'm going to see you in the next show. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.